Good morning. Good morning. My name is Randy Short. I'd like to call the meeting of Boating and Waterways to order. Before we start, I'd like to ask you to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we get started, I'd like to ask Charlie Hesse to call the roll.
Roll call. Commissioner Brian Cooley of Alameda.
Here.
Commissioner David Livingston, Martinez, California.
Here.
Commissioner Virginia Madueño, Riverbank, California.
Here.
Commissioner Douglas Metz, Coronado, California.
Here.
Commissioner Frank Peralta, Bonita, California.
Here.
Vice Chair Catherine Pettibone, West Sacramento. Absent. Chairman Randy Short, Bishop, California.
Here. Thank you, Charlie. The next item is I'd like to introduce the Acting Deputy Director, Ramona Fernandez, and our legal counsel, keeps us all in order, Catherine Tobias. And I think Charlie really took care of introducing the commissioners for me and where everybody's from, so I think we can skip that. One announcement for the public: if you would like to speak, please fill out either a green public comment form for items that are on the agenda, or a blue comment card for items not on the agenda, and you can give those to Charlie. Those cards are on the desk right over there. With that, I'll move into to my report, and I wanted to start my report by expressing my utmost gratitude to our Deputy Director, Ramona Fernandez, and really the entire staff at Boating and Waterways for the cards that were from virtually everyone in the division. 6 weeks ago, my wife was diagnosed with cancer, and the tremendous well wishes from you has been greatly appreciated, so much so it's hard to find words to express my gratitude and my wife's gratitude. Thank you very much. With that, it's hard to believe that it's been 6 weeks since we had our very helpful joint commission meeting. I had to leave halfway through the second day to be with my wife, but I was able to attend most of the meeting and can say that I believe it was very beneficial and that future events can be even more beneficial. Shifting gears, I was able to see Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross describe the outdoor recreation industry as one of the nation's largest and fastest growing, calling the industry statistics phenomenal. It comprises 2.2% of the nation's gross domestic product, $734 billion in annual gross economic output, and guess what is number one in recreational activity? Boating and fishing, the largest core outdoor recreational activity. Obviously, given the number of boats and boaters we have in California, combined with our great climate, California will continue to be one of the largest participants in the country. That said, while we need to listen and be responsive to our constituent organizations, I think that this division needs not wait for that input, but to be out front. I believe boating will require facilities that are more diverse and serve more diverse communities than ever before. In order to do that, we need to be in those communities and help them be in front of boating facilities. Many of these opportunities to introduce the underserved are not immediately money producers and therefore not on our constituents' radar. But here at DBW, we need to provide boating access to a whole new demographic and welcome them to boating through our facilities. With that, I'd like to move on to the commissioner activities updates and any updates that commissioners have as to their activities at this time.
The only thing I want to say is that the Harbor Drive dredging is coming along quite well. It's up to par, and it's on schedule. So people are waiting for it to open so they can use it.
Thank you. Any other updates? Commissioner Madueño.
Chairman Short, I so appreciate everything that you just said and your continued advocacy, if you will, for boating, and yesterday in our workshop, and for you to echo again that boating is definitely evolving. It's changing. Somebody who did not grow up in the boating arena, if you will, somebody who came from the San Joaquin Valley. But two things I want to highlight, especially to your comments right now. In California, we now have what they now call these opportunity zones in these opportunity tracks that have been identified by the governor. I love what you just said, because these are now opportunities to provide private sector investment in some of these areas that have never, ever been given resources or allocations. I recently had a meeting with a number of stakeholders, key stakeholders, in Modesto, California, to look at the possibility of creating a venue, if you will. I'm not going to say that they want to create a San Antonio Riverwalk, but what they want to create is an opportunity, especially in a very, very low-income area that has historically been known for culture, food, music, tradition, but really continues to be in what I would consider an underserved area. And I actually brought up the question, how can we start to create more opportunities for public access to be able to bring in a component of boating along with an opportunity to create more economic development on the Stanislaus River, adjacent to where a lot of these businesses already are, and again, changing the facade of what boating is for this community. And so we know that the demographics are changing in California. Millennials are the fastest growing population in California. So what are we doing as this agency to, again, better address what it is that we do in communities? And in our workshop yesterday, it really became apparent is that we need to evolve with time. And so I want to challenge myself to again, make sure that we're doing the very best that we can as a commission, I as a commissioner, to alert, to inform, to engage, and to excite a new demographic for boating. Because you're right, Commissioner Short, we are changing, and we have to change with the times. Otherwise, we will no longer have a Boating and Waterways Commission.
Thank you for those comments. Any other comments? With that, I'd like to express our sincere thanks to Amy Woodridge. Amy is the Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Alameda, and she has helped immensely with yesterday's tour and today's meeting as well. Thank you very much. And I'd also like to introduce Don Kinneman. Don is from Santa Cruz Harbor. He is the Senior Deputy Harbor Master, And as I understand it, you're wearing two hats today, Don. You're wearing also your California Port Captains and Harbor Masters hat as well. And welcome. And I'd like to also introduce Angie McGraw. Angie is also from Santa Cruz Harbor. Welcome. With that, I would move on to the Deputy Director's report, Ramona Fernandez.
Thank you. Good morning. Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I start my update, I do want to first apologize on behalf of our Director and Chief Deputy Director, Director Mungat, and Chief Deputy Director McGurk, for not being able to make the commission tour and commission meeting. As you all are well aware, we're dealing with another yet state of emergency on the fires. And we were briefed this Tuesday morning by our Chief of the Law Enforcement Emergency Services Division. And Director Mungat has been in direct communication and engaged with the department on meetings at the State Operations Center since Monday. And she continues to be engaged with these fires. Both the Camp and Woolsey fires have had a direct impact on our department. Many state parks employees have lost their homes, but continue to support the mission of our department. Our Angeles district suffered severe property, structural equipment, and supply loss. The department's developed a task force that was put in operation and resources to the Northern Buttes and the Angeles districts impacted by this fire. So I, again, would like to acknowledge all of our first responders that are risking their lives, as well as those that have lost loved ones during these terrible fires. So with that, I want to continue on with my update. So as the division continues to perform its programs, analyzes results, and considerations for future improvements. So you'll hear about specific updates from the loans and grants later in this meeting. I'd like to kind of highlight some success stories that we've had over the last several months in relationships to partners. Okay. So our Aquatic Invasive Control Program will end our 2018 herbicide treatment on the 30th of this month. Though we continue with the mechanical and biological, we will continue with the biological and control methods. But as we all know, the work doesn't stop there. So the team will continue to collaborate on concepts identified on the screen. Ongoing education and training will continue during our off-treatment months, as well as maintaining and upgrading equipment. One of the reasons this program has been successful over the last several years is DBW's continual build on leveraging of partners. As illustrated on this diagram, we work close with federal, state, and local partners. Another way we've leveraged in partnering is in our quagga and zebra mussel infestation and prevention grant program. A mouthful. DBW implemented the QZ Prevention Outreach Pilot Project in Lake Paris between July and September. The project goal was to produce an efficient, cost-effective, and measurable educational outreach program that would be replicated at other water bodies. The outreach consisted of signage and digital advertising asking Lake Paris boaters to take a short quiz to test their knowledge of QZ mussel prevention measures at the lake. In just 8 weeks, over 3,000 boaters and visitors to Lake Paris took the quiz. The successful pilot project demonstrated that this type of outreach provides useful information to area boaters and can be replicated at other water bodies. Again, identifying our great relationships in terms of our training program. Our training program is gearing down in final courses this year. but we are pleased to announce that our 2019 training calendar is now available. Agencies needing training should go to our website and register. Classes fill up quick, so we encourage all agencies that need this training to get out there and sign up. Over the next several slides, I'd like to kind of emphasize the work that has been going on in relationships to our projects. Our loans and facilities grant staff continue to analyze and manage grants to enhance access for California voters. At its 32nd National Voting Access Conference in late September, the state's Organization of Voting Access, better known as SOBA, presented an outstanding project award to the City of Avalon for the replacement of the city's fuel pier, dinghy tie-up, and boater restrooms at Avalon Harbor. DBW's Boating Infrastructure Grant staff, Lisa Fernandez, accepted the award on behalf of the City of Avalon. The annual award recognizes innovative boating facilities that provide safe, well-designed public access to the nation's waterways. Here you'll see the Santa Cruz Shoreline Erosion Control Project. DBW is working with Santa Cruz County to construct a protective structure to prevent coastal erosion and to protect a roadway that provides access into the small craft harbor parking lot. One of our larger projects is the Shelter Island project. As you are all aware, this was a grantee of the Port of San Diego. This particular project was presented to the commission about 3 years ago, November 18th, 2015. Construction began in May of 2017. This is the same project. So the contractor needed to dewater the launch basin before the constructing below water elements of the project, such as the lower portions of the new boat launch ramp. The newly expanded boat launching basin is protected by breakwater that will have a walkable pathway on top. Here you'll see the preparations for pouring one of those pathways. And here's a few other pictures of the recent construction that's been going on at that project site. This is my favorite picture right here. The primary feature of this project is a new 10-lane V-groove cast-in-place boat launching ramp, which was recently completed. Current estimated completion of the Shelter Island project will be open to the public December 2018 with the ribbon cutting ceremony in January of 2019. So next I'm going to kind of highlight a few of the Aquatic Center grants. These next several slides will demonstrate the education programs that several of our grantees from our Aquatic Center grant program provide to California. This particular picture is from the outdoor outreach at Crown Cove Aquatic Center located on Coronado. Here demonstrates another outdoor outreach program over this past summer. California State University Northridge at Castaic Lake. This is another one of our boating infrastructure safety centers known as BISCs. Partnered with the Los Angeles County and school districts to provide boating safety education. This picture also demonstrates the partnership with the California State Northridge at Castaic Lake this last year, which taught over 2,300 students. Coastal Cleanup 2018. Since 2011, DBW has worked with the California Coastal Commission on coastal cleanup with growing involvement from boaters. Again this year, the boating community demonstrated its interest and commitment to keeping our shorelines and waterways clean. This is another picture of the South Bay Yacht Club Sea Scout ship, number 300, the Spartans, helping in that effort. And here's some statewide results. There was over 65,000 volunteers this last year, and we removed about over 600,000 pounds of trash. Our California Boater Card, we've issued about over 16,000 boater cards since October 30th. As a reminder, boaters can apply for the card prior to taking a safety course. Boater education course providers have reported record numbers of California participants, and this kind of diagrams where we are with that program. So, California State Parks reorganization. So this chart kind of demonstrates and shows where we are in the process. Yesterday at our workshop, we had a good discussion regarding the department's reorg. So I want to kind of recap on some of the key points of our reorg, in addition to what's identified on the screen. The Division of Boating and Waterways will continue to be responsible for providing safe and convenient public access to California waterways and leadership in promoting safe, enjoyable, and environmentally sound recreational boating. In addition to the statewide program management and oversight, the division will be responsible for policy and procedure development and serve as the department's subject matter expert. The division's deputy director will be responsible to ensure that there's not any communication gaps. The division will maintain a commission, and the commission's role and the role of the commission will not change. Key staff that are transitioning into other divisions within the department will continue to participate and engage in DBW's meetings, stakeholder, boating association conferences, and continue to serve as boating experts. There will be minimal transition of staff at this time. So what does this mean? The California Natural Resources Agency, will be moving into a new facility, which is currently being built. The established completion of this building is 2020. DBW will move into the new facility along with the rest of the department. Until that occurs, DBW programs transitioning to other divisions that are located in the resources building will maintain at one cap with along with the division where the division is currently reside now. There'll be no additional administrative overhead costs to the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. There'll be deputy director, division chief positions in other divisions with boating units will not be supported by the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. And, And lastly, at yesterday's workshop, the division also provided the commission with the requested 30-year data for loans and boat launch facility grants. There are copies available here in the room, and we will make that a copy available also online. At our last commission, Commissioner Madueño asked and inquired about our education material in Spanish. The division is currently working on this, on a lot of our outreach and education materials as well as publications. And that completes my division report, Mr. Chair. If there's no questions, I'll continue on with the ledge update.
Thank you. Are there any comments from commissioners? Commissioner Metz, please.
Yes, thank you very much for the report, Fernandez. I did not have the benefit of the discussion yesterday because I was unable to make the field trip. but I have just so many questions with respect to the reorganization, the seeming dichotomy between activities that are water related, some of them which are leaving the department, apparently. The boat accident prevention program, you had a slide on that, as I recall. So that would not be a part of the new division, as I understand. Well, lots of questions like that, so I'm hopeful that our agenda, Mr. Chairman, for the next commission meeting has a prominent early item on the agenda for a discussion of the reorganization. I do not want to put the deputy director in a position because it just isn't appropriate at this time.
Thank you, Commissioner Metz, and I would certainly echo that our director did call me yesterday and apologize for her not being able to be here. Certainly understandable given the emergencies that are going on throughout the state and the devastation to everyone's property, including state parks and so on. So is it your desire to see this? I think it was helpful yesterday that we had the workshop, but I think it would be, I would recommend at least that we have the director come to a workshop prior so we can discuss this in real detail and then have it also an item for the for our formal agenda at our next meeting. But I think it's important that we can go over things in detail and really understand what this means and how this impacts staff and the commission's role.
Chairman, just one second question not related to that, and that is, what is the status of our boating needs assessment? As you know, Commissioner Short and myself have constituted a subcommittee that has met by telephone and otherwise with the Sacramento State team. So we're very curious as to what further revisions are planned and also when there will be a decision to freeze the text and move forward to a final report.
So as you know, you've been participating in meetings with the California State University, and so what we're going to do is continue on with those conference calls with the ad hoc committee as well as with Sac State to work through that there was some concerns regarding the executive summary and clarification and definitions. So I think we're working with the commission ad hoc as well as Sac State and staff to clarify those, define those areas where we can make some revisions, and then we'll provide a draft copy to the ad hoc committee to review prior to it becoming an action or an agenda item. We have requested an extension on the contract with Sac State to ensure that we get all of the information or comments or requests that the ad hoc committee had made during those conference calls. So I believe we've extended it to a year, but I don't anticipate that it'll be that long.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Any other comments? Yeah, Commissioner Livingston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment and a question for Deputy Director Fernandez. First of all, thank you for the report. And again, thank you for the division's continuing support of law enforcement training. I think in the statistics that I've seen here, at least as far as 2016, there were over 300 law enforcement officers or ancillary positions trained through DBAW, which is significant. And at a time when we're seeing the post-funding retracting, POST is the Peace Officer Standards and Training that funds much of California's law enforcement training, this DBAW training is even more critical. So thank you for that. And I would just note for the record, as the representative for law enforcement on the commission, that I certainly hope under the reorg that the funding, particularly that from the revolving fund, that supports that training, supports the grants to local law enforcement agencies to acquire equipment, and, of course, the abandoned watercraft funding would remain intact and would not be dissipated amongst the entire Parks Department. At least that's my hope, and hopefully we'll hear more about that in future meetings. Yep. And thank you.
You're welcome. And just to clarify, Sheriff, yes, we also want to thank your agency as well as all local law enforcement agencies in addition to our own state parks that have provided instructors. We couldn't possibly be able to do this program without the partnership of our local law enforcement instructors and all of this sheriff's support that provide that the cadre to our training program. So we also want to acknowledge and thank all of the Sheriff's Association as well.
Great. Thank you for that.
Also, the program is funded not through the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. It is funded through the Recreational Boating Safety Grant Funds that we receive through the Coast Guard.
Right. Thank you.
And as far as the abandoned watercraft abatement, that is an important program, grant program to us as well. So that program is not going away or the funding.
Thank you.
A quick question of Commissioner Livingston. My understanding is you have a new position. Could maybe you share that with the rest of the commissioners?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I take over as the president of the California State Sheriff's Association in January. So how that might impact my service here on the commission, I'm still not sure just yet, but I'll be in the position of representing all 58 sheriffs in California, particularly with our new administration, our new governor, and new legislature, and look forward to a very fruitful working relationship with them. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Congratulations on behalf of the commission. And we certainly hope that it won't diminish your participation here
you.
At Boating and Waterways, which is always, the expertise is always very welcome.
Thank you.
With that, are there any public comments related to the deputy director's report? I have no cards, so I'm assuming there are none. With that, I'd like to move on to...
I'm going to the legislative
Sorry,
report.
Sorry, yep. You're right. We did. You have the legislative report.
Okay.
Thank you.
So the legislative report. This report provides a summary and status of bills that affect the Division of Boating and Waterways. Senate Bill 790 McGuire, the Dresden Mussel Infestation Prevention Grant. The summary, this bill expands the eligibility criteria for the quagga and zebra mussel prevention and grant program administered by the Division of Boating and Waterways to include those individuals or entities who manage any aspect of the water in a reservoir. And the status, it's Chapter 558, Statute of 2018. Assembly Bill 2175, the vessel removal. This bill authorizes peace officers to remove and store a vessel and its trailer if there is probable cause that the vessel was used in the commission of a crime as defined. The status of this, Chapter 341, Statutes of 2018. Assembly Bill 2441, Frazier, Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta, removal of abandoned commercial vessels. This bill requires that the State Lands Commission to develop by July 1, 2019, a plan for the removal of abandoned commercial vessels. The plan will prioritize the removal of vessels based on the risk to the environment of the Sacramento, San Joaquin Delta, and public health and safety as defined. This bill does not have a direct impact on the Division of Boating and Waterways vessel removal program. Status, Chapter 540, Statutes of 2018. Commission action, this is for information only, and that completes my report.
Thank you. Any comments from the commission? One comment, I don't know if you know can update us on the status of the 12-month fishing license. I don't know if that's something you have information on.
Let me see if I have any of that one.
But my
The last information I have on that, and I'll confirm that this is the most current, is that it passed to the assembly floor on August 16th, 2018.
Yeah, my understanding is that it died somewhere along the way.
Okay.
Because Fish and Game put amended it to increase the fees, and so the support, my understanding is the support was pulled. I think that, you know, part of my report related to outdoor recreation and the fact that boating and fishing just is hand in glove. I mean, that, and it's, I think, certainly at least for me, disappointing that that this, for 2 years now, this has been put forward for a 12-month fishing license, meaning that if, and what I mean by a 12-month fishing license is that if you were to go out and buy a fishing license today, it's only good until the end, until December 31st. So, and fishing licenses aren't inexpensive, so especially to people from lower income, it virtually makes it impossible or not justifiable that you can get a fishing license that's only good for 30 days. You have to buy it actually on January 1 in order for it to be good for 12 months. And so the attempt has been by, and the bills have had support from virtually every chamber of commerce, from every fishing organization, boating organization, cities, counties, everybody, and the fact that we can't seem to get that in place is really, at least for me, disappointing, since it's so integral to boating. Thank you for your report.
You're welcome.
With that, did we cover public comments not on the agenda? And I don't have any cards, so I assume we can move on. With that, we'll move to division project reports. The Encinal boat ramp. Joe, are you ready? You ready to do that? Thanks. I know we're rushing you a little bit. We're a bit ahead of schedule.
No problem. Waiting on the slides. Good morning, Chairman Short, Commissioners, Acting Deputy Director Fernandez, Legal Counsel Tobias. My name is Joe Dukes, Project Manager with the Grants and Loans Unit. And it is my pleasure to present the City of Alameda's request for a $1.45 million construction grant for improvements to the Encinal boat launching facility. Representing the City of Alameda, and will be assisting with questions you may have later, is the Recreation and Parks Director, Amy Wilderich. And we are here to seek the Commission's advice and comment on this project. The map, the Encinal boat launching facility is located in Alameda County, approximately 85 miles southwest of Sacramento. It is located in the southern shores of the city of Alameda. The city of Alameda is an island that provides two public boat launching facilities. In the north is the Grand Street boat launching facility that provides access to the estuary. It is in the southern shores is the Encinal boat launching facility. Originally constructed in 1981, it is more desirable for boaters seeking access to the San Francisco Bay. The facility features a two-lane boat ramp, pile-guided boarding floats, 37 vehicle trailer parking stalls, and a restroom. It is open from dawn to dusk, 7 days a week, year-round. The facility supports recreational activities such as windsurfing, sailing, kayaking, and fishing. The western portion of the facility which is shared by Bay Trail users, is not a part of this proposed project. The city's Public Works Department recently resurfaced the entrance driveway and plans to improve the western part of the parking area in the within the next 2 years. The commission has had the opportunity to see this facility in person during yesterday's tour. The existing two-lane precast concrete V-groove boat ramp has deteriorated. There are large cracks, as you can see. The V-grooves are worn, making it difficult to launch and retrieve vessels. The boarding float's wood surface was resurfaced with city funds 2 years ago. However, the boarding float infrastructure is not expected to withstand another strong storm. The concrete piles also needs replacement to address sea level rise. The project proposes to demolish the existing piles and boarding floats, a new 50-foot-long gangway with new piles, and a 8-foot-wide by 40-foot-long boarding float will be installed on the east part of the ramp for motorized launching. A new 8-foot-wide by 80-foot-long low freeboard boarding float with new concrete piles will be installed on the west side of the ramp for non-motorized launching. A staging area would also be constructed near the top of the ramp for non-motorized boaters. The existing restroom near the approach of the ramp has been out of use for many years due to disrepair. The city currently has two portable restrooms near the restroom building until a new restroom can be constructed. The existing parking area striping has faded, making it a potential hazard for pedestrians. And this is the proposed project construction plan for Encinal Boat Launching Facility. The construction plan is completed to the 90% level. Improvements includes replacing the ramp, adding motorized and non-motorized components, a staging area, replacing the restroom, and parking area. A city-furnished fish cleaning station and outdoor shower would also be installed. And the table here identifies the previously mentioned improvements. The table is from the 90% plans level. We estimate that over 8,400 motorized and over 1,600 non-motorized boaters would benefit from the improvements annually. Over 201,000 motorized and non-motorized boaters would benefit from the 20-year life of this grant. And DBW analysis established that a benefit-cost ratio of over 1 is considered from a financial perspective, and the benefit-cost ratio for this project is 1.71. And now we seek the Commission's advice and comment on this proposed $1.45 million Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund construction grant to the City of Alameda Recreation and Parks Department for Encinal Boat Launching Facility improvements as described in this November 15th, 2018 feasibility report. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
You know what? When I was in the parking lot yesterday, I noticed there's no lighting in the parking lot, even though it's from sunset to sunrise or vice versa. Would you think some lighting would be there?
Yeah, there would be. There should be a lighting at the top of the ramp and one near the restroom.
Any other questions?
Yes, as a resident of Alameda, I would strongly support this program. I mean, we're an island, and access to the water is really important. So, I would strongly support this project.
Thank you.
And I think that. Knowing Alameda well, that the fact that it is a launch ramp on the bay as opposed to in the estuary makes a substantial difference. I mean, you transit that estuary quite regularly and, 30 minutes or so to get to the bay?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I'm berthed in the estuary, and it does take about 30 minutes to get to the end of the estuary. This allows you immediate access to the bay, and which is something that the other launch ramp doesn't provide. So,
right.
I strongly support this project.
Thank you.
Any other comments? I would entertain a motion if there are no other comments.
So moved.
I second it.
Moved by Commissioner Cooley and seconded by Commissioner Peralta. Charlie, could you call the roll, please?
Commissioner Brian Cooley, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner David Livingston, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Virginia Madueño, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Doug Metz, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Frank Peralta, how do you vote?
Aye.
Chairman Short, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Six ayes, approved.
Thank you. Thank you, Joe. With that, we'll move on to the our Quagga and Zeeblemussel grant program. I apologize. I took things a little out of order there.
Chairman Short, if you wouldn't mind, could you please allow that agenda item to be moved to the last presentation?
Sure.
Due to the timing?
Sure.
We'll go right into...
Then we'll go into...
Joe Dux's program.
Yeah. Joe, looks like you can just stay up here.
Hello again. Joe Dux, project manager with the Grants and Loans Unit. And I will be providing program updates for the next four programs, project grants. The first one is the Boat Launching Facility Grant Program. This program provides funding to local government agencies to develop or improve public boat launching facilities, primarily for motorized launching. Featured here is the Channel Islands Boat Launching Facility project that was funded through this program. This is the facility before construction. Here's a picture of the picture during construction and the final improved facility. Here is the program budget for the last 3 years. We currently have approximately 50 projects at various stages of design and construction. The application deadline is February 1 of 2019 for the upcoming funding cycle, and we plan to have an online grant available for the upcoming funding cycle. And this is a list of projects that we've completed in the last 3 years. I'll give you a second to take a look at that. Okay. Are there any questions before I move forward to the next program? Okay. Next program is the Ramp Repair and Modification Grant Program. This program provides funding to quickly restore safe and convenient public boating access for facilities that were damaged. Feature here is the Red Bluff Riverfront Park Boat Launch Facility that was left high and dry when the diversion dam was decommissioned in 2011. As you can see, there's a shimmer of the river far in the background. This is the end of the ramp here. This program provides funding to restore access to the portion of the river here. We're installing concrete mats here, and we now have a usable ramp. Here is the program funding from the past 3 years. We currently have one ramp repair modification project at the planning stage. The application deadline is February 1 of 2019 for the upcoming cycle. And we plan to have an online grant application available for the fiscal year 2021 funding cycle. And this is a list of projects that were completed from the past 3 years. Any questions before I move forward to the next program? This is the Non-Motorized Boat Launching Facility Grant Program. This program provides funding to create or improve public non-motorized boating access. Feature here is the Waterford Riverfront Boating Facility. The commission did see this facility in person during last year's November tour. Here are some pictures of the progress. We are currently in construction, and it should be completed before the end of this year. And this is the program budget for the past 3 years. We currently have 9 projects at various stages of design and construction. Application deadline is February 1 of 2019 for the upcoming funding cycle. And we also plan to have an online grant application available for fiscal year 2021. Any questions before I move forward?
Oh. Yeah, I have a quick question. This is an area that's near and dear to my heart, and I think also Commissioner Madueño, because of its access to providing access to underserved communities, and given the fact that at our joint commission meeting 6 weeks ago, we heard from the deputy director that there's 3 million kayaks in California, while there are only roughly 700,000 motorized or registered boats. Clearly, the kayak, stand-up paddleboard, the hand launch area is just growing exponentially, and it's such a tremendous way for people to gain access and to realize the benefits of boating and fishing from a kayak and so on. So I guess my specific question, as it has been previously, is our demand for hand launch facilities exceeding what we have currently in the budget? Maybe that's a question for Karen Dill.
Yeah. Commissioner Short, thank you, Karen Dill, the manager of these programs that you're hearing today. We know that the demand is high for this. Unfortunately, we're not receiving as many grant applications as we have funding available. So last year we had several hundreds of thousands of dollars still left on the table. With the new budget allowance to let us carry that over for 2 years, we still have some of that money available for this next year. In February of this year, we did not receive, we received one application for the $2 million available. And that we're working through some of the details on that. They weren't exactly prepared to apply for grants, so we're working with our engineering team to get a good cost estimate. It's a valuable project. So quite a few of the non-motorized access points, they're small communities, they don't have the resources, so it's we're using our resources to help assist them get to the point where they can apply for a grant. So they're a little bit more...
hand-holding?
Pardon?
A little bit more hand-holding?
Yes, which we're willing to do and we're doing. So we have several projects in the stream that will be ready to move forward once they're ready to go. But what we have been doing is doing like what we saw at Encinal, is in our existing boat launching facilities, implementing a non-motorized component. So we can use the same engineering team as doing everything. We can fund that part of the demographic when we do the motor for the motorized as well. So just like you saw yesterday, we have a non-motorized, or the low freeboard float. Non-motorized boaters can use that there. Yeah. Does that answer the question?
It does. I have a follow-up that, and I appreciate that the division is out helping, because this is kind of what I talked about in my report, that I think these are communities that don't even know about the needs, maybe, or have thought about the needs of their communities. So I'd certainly challenge us to be out there, staff to be out there pushing, but also the commission to be out there pushing and educating these smaller communities that this kind of thing is available. And it's it's just so critical in that, like I said, there are 3 million kayaks in the state of California, and it's often difficult to find a place to that facilitates launching.
Right. One of the things that we learned at the state's Organization for Boating Access, where we received the national award that Ramona discussed at Avalon, we also, at that conference, we talked about non-motorized boating access as well. And so there is a lot of the issues that we're seeing in California with ADA access are not just California specific. They are nationwide. And so SOBA is taking the lead nationwide to talk with the ADA board, say, okay, what can we do? Where does the line cross? Because oftentimes we have areas along our water bodies that are just impossible to have standard ADA access. So how can we meet that community's needs in a way that's cost-effective so we can do more with the funding that we have available nationwide. So California is involved in that conversation as well as our engineers, and we're hoping to have nationwide guidance within the next 2 years. So that's a good effort. We'll be very helpful so that all of the needs of the boating community, including those with disabilities, can have access to the water.
And I had a discussion recently with one of the senior Forest Service people, and I was alarmed at that conversation because my understanding is that the person that is in Washington, D.C. that heads up the access for the Forest Service is retiring. And my understanding is that they're talking about eliminating the position. Mm. And having lived in the forest most of my life and utilizing Forest Service land, Forest Service is already, I think, well behind, at least certainly in my neighborhood, in achieving real access to lakes and so on. Whether they be hand launch or motorized launch. So hopefully we can push and support that position, that they replace that position, because I think that needs to be prominent nationwide, since I'm probably repeating myself, as you get older you do that. The two statistics that drive me on a daily basis are 22 veterans a day committing suicide. And these programs are so important to those guys, especially the current guys coming home. Those kind of programs are so important. I know our previous deputy director, Chris Conlon, and I attended some things where with some Marines who said if it wasn't for these programs, they wouldn't be here today. So I think it's very important that you continue with those kind of things that you're doing. And the statistic as well that I certainly relate to is that there, and I think this is probably 4 years old now, which is 10,000 baby boomers a day are turning 65. Well, that means 6 years from now, 10,000 baby boomers a day are going to be turning 75. And accessibility is just going to be vital to that group as well. My understanding is that Iowa, of all places, has done some tremendous work, and that there are some guidances that they've looked into, and just a suggestion, we might take a look at those. But my understanding is they're way out in front of hand launch kind of facilities.
Thank you.
Thank you for the proactive approach to these small communities that really don't understand. I mean, it's one thing for the city of San Diego to do something, or the port of San Diego, but it's another thing for the city of Bishop or Riverbank or communities like that that really don't have the resources or knowledge, some that don't even know we exist and can help them out. So thank you for being proactive in that.
Jaron?
Commissioner Metz.
Long as still is up there, I'd like you to be as specific as possible. To whom do you publicize the availability of this program generally? Who are you contacting?
Can you wait till the sound? Is the sound on now? Okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
Okay.
So we issue it to, we publicize it in all of the newspapers. We issue a press release about it every year. It is on our website. We talk to organizations. Right now, with the reorg and being a part of Parks, we are talking with a lot of all of our other grantees, letting them know, or not our grantees, but the other state agencies within Parks, divisions within Parks, to let them know what we have available, because they also inform all of their constituents about our programs as well. It's one of the benefits of being one or department. Also, it's on the Natural Resources Agency website as funding available. So any city, county, district, it's all available then if they're looking for funding. Then when the voting needs assessment study comes out, then we'll be able to take a more proactive approach and strategically look at areas that have not been addressed or don't have boating access along waterways. And that's our goal for the boating needs assessment study, is being strategic about, okay, going to these local communities and saying, this, we have this money available, we can help you.
Well, so, put yourself in the position of an official in planning or recreation in a local facility. You make them aware of this, but unless they have demand from their constituents, it's just another thing to do to try to whip up support, and that's really, in many cases, not their job. I'm thinking about going out to all of the magazines on non-motorized voting, canoeing, the whole raft of them. Go right to the users who are non-motorized and tell them of this program and advise them to contact appropriate forest officials, local county parks, whatever is appropriate. I think we've got to publicize the fact that this wonderful program exists. Monies are not fully expended for it because they're not being utilized, and build up some type of groundswell of support. It's the people's money, and they ought to know about this. So that's just my suggestion. Plan your marketing program, contact some of these outdoor recreation associations, particularly those associated with non-motorized vessels. And, of course, there are many.
Great. Thank you.
Two comments or questions. Excuse me. One that comes to mind when we start talking about these things, and I'm questioning your resources. One of the things that I see out there, I know there's interest, for example, in the Owens Valley. There's been some interest expressed by the Department of Water, LA Department of Water and Power, but they don't really know anything about it. So, you know, how to go about it, and so on, what needs to be done to facilitate access. On. But my understanding, I know I had a meeting with one of our engineers a week or so ago, and how many engineers do you have currently working on boating projects?
We have one dedicated engineer.
When we were a department, what was that, 2 years ago, 3 years, 4 years ago? Oh, five, six, seven. This is what my wife does to me. I say it was a year ago, and she said, no, six. So, anyway, where were we as far as how many engineers did we have
If I remember correctly, there were about eight.
So we've got a significant, you're really, it sounds to me, I mean, you haven't said it, but it sounds to me, my words, you're really hamstrung with the resources that you have available. If a city came to you and said, gee, could you come up with a few concepts of what we might be able to do here or there, you'd really be stressed to be able to provide that because of the number of staff that we have to help us with some of those engineering, some of that engineering information.
Well, I can tell you that the one engineer, he is a supervisor, so he's training some other ones on his staff to do boating-specific work. We're also augmenting his staff with funding outside engineers to help with a concept development. So far, the needs of our existing work have been met. I do anticipate that once we get the boat needs assessment study and we start being more strategic and planning, that the demand will exceed. But right now, they're able to meet the demand for our unit.
One last question.
Yeah.
Can we provide, like we do with motorized launch ramps, can we provide money for planning?
Yes.
For hand launch as well? So
yes.
If one of our commissioners were to contact a small city and they just don't know what to do, they could come to us for a planning grant.
Absolutely.
To hire the expertise to help them through it. We could fund that.
Absolutely.
That's excellent. That to me is an excellent avenue. Commissioner Metz.
Yeah, one final question, as long as you're up there, Karen. Looking back at my time on the commission, for many years, the predominant activity was the application by cities and other governmental agencies, harbor districts, etc., for loans. I haven't seen a loan on our agenda for some time. Why is that?
We discussed that as part of the workshop yesterday.
You did? I'm sorry, I missed it.
There are several components to that. A lot of it is demand. We have not seen applications from public agencies or private agencies. We've had one application for private loans in the last 4 years, so we're not receiving applications. In the last 4 years, we've also only received, we've received two applications for public loan funding. One of those decided to withdraw because there's some contaminants that they're dealing with. The other application will potentially be coming before the commission next year for Berkeley Marina, actually. So far, we haven't received applications. Not that we should just be reactive, but the proactive side, since the statute says that we need to conform to commercial lending practices. I don't know that our current process and evaluative process and loan documents do that. I don't have the expertise there. So we are going out to seek that through experts who do that for a living. And we're close to having an agreement with those experts. Hopefully be able to start working on that in the next year.
Thank you. You already answered my next question.
Great. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, and since you brought it up, the deputy director did cover a little of that in her report. I wanted to come back and thank you personally for the tremendous amount of work that you provided for us yesterday in our workshop. I think it will be immensely helpful. Obviously, we have to digest it because it was a tremendous amount of work and a tremendous amount of information. And we have asked in the workshop, and want to say it here, for some further information, some graphs and things like that that will help us understand where we've been historically and where we are currently. And that will be very helpful, I think. And also, we talked about the loan programs a little bit. And it is this body's responsibility to set the rate for the public sector loans, and we were assured yesterday that some of that guidance may be forthcoming to us to understand what's appropriate, where we ought to be on those loans, because I have heard from some of our constituents that at least over the last 5 or so years that our rate has been too high, and so it hasn't been appealing to some government agencies to borrow from us. So it sounds to me like we're moving in the right direction to get that back on track of where we might have been historically. Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you remember where you were, Joe?
Yeah, I have like 2 more slides. So.
All right, we have to move. I have to move the car. Be
right back. Waiting for the slides. Here we go. So here is the projects that were completed in the past 3 years for this program. And the last program is the sign grant program that provides funding to install, replace signs that were missing, damaged, or inaccurate. This picture on the left is the Eureka sign that's old and worn, and the one on the right is the replacement sign. And that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. I have one more question related to your sign program.
Okay.
Is that the local agency that's typically asking for those replacements?
Yes. Local government agencies own facilities that if they have a sign that needs replacement, they would notify us and we would take care of that for them.
I will get you some local information in my neighborhood that we may not be aware of. But
thank you. Yeah,
there are certainly some signs in our neighborhood that need replacing in some of our facilities.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments, questions from Mr. Dukes? All right. With that, I'd like to take a 10-minute break, and we will promptly be back using the clock on the wall in 10 minutes at 25 after. Thank you. Here in a little bit so that we can have the demonstration from the folks with quagga mussels. With that, I'd like to move on to our floating restroom grant program. Lisa Fernandez. Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you. Good morning. Again,
morning.
My name is Lisa Fernandez, project manager with the Division of Boating and Waterways. And I'm here today to provide a project update on our floating restroom grant program and also our pump out facility grant program. Both of these are funded through the Clean Vessel Act, also known as CVA. In 1992, Congress passed the Clean Vessel Act to help reduce sewage discharges from recreational vessels into our U.S. waters. DBW serves as a state grant coordinator on behalf of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the funding for these CVA grant programs comes from the Sport Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. As we all know, California is one of the top boating states nationally, and we are working hard to provide services to our California boaters, like our floating restrooms. Floating restroom grants are currently available to government entities who operate lakes and reservoirs, and applications are now being accepted for floating restroom grants on our online grant application system. This cycle's deadline is today, November 15th. And just on a side note, we sent out a press release for our floating restroom grant program, and the next day we were invited to a radio interview, so it did. We did get airtime on KFBK in the morning, 5 to 7 a.m. in Sacramento, so that was exciting. All of the new floating restrooms that will be constructed and deployed will be ADA accessible, and the new ADA design is shown there on the screen. During the 2016 and 17 cycle, we delivered 11 floating restrooms to our inland lakes with our CVA funding. The list of these lakes are here on the slide. The CVA grant award funds expended for this project was $690,245. The total match paid through the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund was $230,082, giving us a total project cost of just over $920,000. This will conclude my presentation on the floating restroom grants. I'd like to see if there's any questions before I move on to the pump-out facility grants.
Any questions from the commission?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Pump-out facility grants are available to both public and private marina facility operators that are open to the public and service recreational vessels. Grant opportunities include equipment, operation and maintenance, pump-out boats, and education and outreach. Pump-out facility grant program helps fund 75% of the construction, renovation, or operation and maintenance of pump-out and dump stations to service recreational vessels. When grantees have completed their projects, they must display a sign with the national pump-out symbol. Facilities may not charge more than $5, and they must be open to the general public for recreational vessels. Currently, we accept applications for this program on a continuous basis, and we are working on putting the CVA grant application on to OLGA, which should be completed by the end of December. The following shows a list of current CVA projects, and I'm happy to announce that all of these projects are completed except the Bridge Bay Marina in Shasta, which they just recently received their CVA grant application, their fully executed agreement. So they will start soon. Our CVA education and outreach program is to educate our boaters about why it is important to pump it, don't dump it. We have two sub-grantees providing this education and outreach regionally with CVA funding. Between the Bay Foundation, who is our Southern California grantee, and San Francisco Estuary Partnership, our Northern California grantee, they monitor over 150 pump outs on a quarterly basis. Our grantees provide education and outreach through boat shows, dock walker trainings, they present at marinas, and many other special events. On this slide shows our grantees providing education at the Sacramento Boat Show, and also pictured is the front cover of the Boater's Guide of Southern California, which provides a list of the pump outs, fueling and waste disposal, custom harbor maps, and really a lot of great resourceful information. This guide, along with many other boater resources like training videos, can be all found on our DBW website. I encourage you to take a look to see what other amazing work our grantees do. Our CVA grant program is becoming famous for many reasons, but I'm sharing one of the reasons today, which is the Pump Out Nav app. This was developed by our sub-grantees, the San Francisco Estuary Partnership, and as I shared with you last November, this revolutionary app allows boaters in California to find operational pump-out stations, to also flag non-working units, and to access an array of outreach and educational material. The app is available for download at Google Play and the App Store, and you can also find it at our own Boat CA app under the Clean and Green. This was launched in April 2017, and we have approximately 2,000 downloads. This app has gained popularity and is now actually being used in other states, including Oregon and Vermont. DBW manages one of the largest CVA programs nationally, and we provide many essential services to our California boaters with our CVA funding. Before I conclude, I'd like to see if you have any questions on our CVA program.
Any questions from the commission? Commissioner Mitz.
Yes, I have one.
Yes.
Of the funds available, how much, how many, if any, are not utilized?
I would need to get back to you on that. We have had some transition through our audit and being a new staff of last year. But in our current grant cycle, the federal funding that we're receiving, we are planning to expend all of the money for the CVA grant pump outs, for the equipment grants, and our education and outreach. But as for the numbers, I would need to get back to you on that to make it.
For the grants, I notice they vary considerably in amount. Now, what is the grant involve? Does it involve the actual delivery of the pump-out unit?
Well, when we do a CVA grant for a pump-out facility grant, it's usually a marina coming in with their application. And after it is approved, they will go out and do they will order the equipment, install the equipment, and then they will have a request to have it reimbursed. And so they send that packet in, it's reviewed, make sure it's in compliance, and then we reimburse them.
But they front the money first.
They front the money.
Any other questions? I have one, and I don't know if you can answer the question or if this is a question. I know that historically we have provided grant funding to marinas in various locations to do pump outs within the marina. And I know it had a question before is to, I guess we had some problems with the feds when they audited what we had done, and they felt that my understanding is they felt that was a gift of public funds to do that. And I asked that when you guys had discussions with the feds that you try to advocate for loosening up those requirements. It's difficult for me and others to grasp what the difference is between providing one pump out pump that serves one person period at a time versus a similar pump that then can be used throughout a marina. Hard for me to really grasp philosophically the difference, since I think what the idea of the grants was to try and eliminate as many people pumping or dumping as we possibly could. And it seems that we had a trend going where marinas were willing to do that, to get a grant from us, provide those, and then they would maintain those. Do you know if you've made any strides with the feds to loosen up their requirements? Or is that a question for Karen Dill again?
Hi, thank you. This was a large topic of conversation at SOBA, the State's Organization for Voting Access, because not only California is not the only agency that does this across the nation.
Is there any sense that there's some consideration?
No. The crux of the issue is being publicly accessible. And if a marina, if these funds are funding pump outs that are only accessible to one birther per month, If a birther has that space and it's only accessible to that one person, then it's not technically publicly accessible. So that's why they want these facilities to be on a dock where they can access 20 people a day or 40 or 50 or 5 can access these publicly funded pump outs. That's the intent of the funding.
I would challenge that philosophy. When you look at some place, Channel Islands Harbor, for example, Ventura Harbor, Marina Del Rey, if you've got pump out at every berth, you don't have any demand for the individual pump out because you've taken care of 4,000 people that occupy that harbor. So it's simply a question, gee, do they just pull into their berth and pump out, or do they have to go over and wait for the pump out to be available? And I hope we continue supporting other states that want to see it different as well, because I think there's a lack of understanding, certainly in California, as to how that works. I mean, it might be different on a lake versus how the ocean works. But
it's also economics, too. There are very limited funds nationwide for this program. And as you saw the numbers, we can do a public pump out at a public dock for anywhere between $20,000 and $30,000. Whereas in slip pump outs, you're talking $200,000 for a marina, or places like Alamitos Bay, $1 million. So that money goes a lot further if it's on a public dock than it is on in slip pump outs. So the debate is ongoing. We have advocates on all sides. The law is currently being reviewed right now by all of the upper folks at Fish and Wildlife, for the intent of the funding. We're also discussing with them, and we're hoping for a ruling. We've been asking for a ruling on availability of use of those pump outs for liveaboards. Right now, the interpretation of the law precludes the use of folks who live aboard their vessels from using the pump outs, which is a huge problem, in particularly in the Bay Area and Southern California, with our constituents who live aboard who don't pump out.
Hopefully knowledgeable people will continue to give them input, because it sounds sounds to me like there's some lack of understanding of how
things work
out there.
It's the liveaboards that are the issue, as well as commercial pump out boats that make a living on this. Those are precluded from using the publicly funded. So we're looking and making. We made recommendations for ways to augment this to be able to charge. Right now, the maximum charge per pump out is $5. If you have a septic system, it can overwhelm. One pump out can overwhelm a septic system, and then it's very expensive to pump that out. So we're looking at ways to fix that, particularly in the Delta right now. It's a big challenge, and so we're working with our federal partners to try and ease up the interpretation so that our waters can remain clean with the funding available and dedicated for that purpose.
Well, I suspect if you need support, we can muster some support to get some knowledge into the system, because that clearly doesn't make any sense.
Right.
And is certainly not in the spirit of what everyone's trying to do.
Right. We're grateful for the support that we received. About two years ago or 3 years ago, this discussion came to a head, and our federal partners said, okay, we really need to make a decision, and we sent out to Harbor Masters, MRA, all of our constituents to weigh in on this issue, and California was very vocal, and unfortunately, you know, like state government, federal government moves even slower. So each time we meet and each time we talk to the, like, where's the decision? Where's it? Oh, it's coming, it's coming. So it's it was discussed at SOBA, and our federal partners do know that this is a huge issue because we cannot move forward or put the states, we cannot move forward until we get a ruling.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right.
Yeah.
Just quickly, just so I understand,
being a liveaboard.
So a liveaboard cannot go to a public pump out and pump out. Is that correct?
So what the feds have told us is that minor use, no one's going to bat an eye, but if those are the primary users of the publicly funded pump out, then it could be an auditable item, an audit finding.
Just a second question. So these are only for public docks. So a private yacht club could not apply for any of these funds and have one installed?
A private yacht club could, but it would need to be accessible to any recreational boater.
Oh, it would have to be okay.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're going to the yacht, if the yacht club will allow you to dock at their dock where the pump out facility is, then it's perfectly acceptable.
But a liveaboard still isn't allowed.
But the liveaboard. Yeah. Okay.
Figure the logic.
Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Commission. Thanks. And now, Casey, are you ready to go there?
I am.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, commissioners, everyone. Great to be here. My name is Casey Caldwell. I am a project manager in Karen Dill's unit, and today I'll be providing four more brief updates on loan and grant programs in our unit, and we're going to start with public loans, which I know we've already covered some of this real estate today, so please indulge me, might be a little bit redundant. But the first of our four programs here is for public marinas, and this program is formally called the Local Assistance Public Small Craft Harbor Loan Program. The program is authorized in statute at Harbor's Navigation Code, Section 71.4, and through this program, DBW loans funds from the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund to local government agencies for the construction of new small craft harbors and for the expansion or the improvement of existing marina facilities. Project elements DBW typically funds through this program are numerous. They include boat berthing, breakwater construction, construction dredging, harbor master buildings, fuel docks, pump out facilities, restrooms, utilities, landscaping. Facilities that will be rented or leased to commercial or concession enterprises are not eligible to receive loan funds through this program. The facility pictured on the slide is the San Francisco Marina West Harbor in northern San Francisco, just next to Chrissy Field. City received $23.5 million in a series of loans between 2004 and 2010, and those loans are currently in repayment. Thank you. Okay, program's budget, fiscal year 2018-19, did not authorize any new funds for loans through this program from the state budget. The last loan we made through this program was $5.4 million to Santa Barbara for Marina One back in fiscal year 13-14. DBW has made numerous loans through this program in the past several decades, and loans are currently in repayment and generating principal and interest for the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. As shown on the slide, in fiscal year 17-18, about $4.7 million in loan principal was repaid to the revolving fund, and Lendy's also paid about $5.6 million in interest to the fund. As of last month, there were 65 loans to 24 Lendy's that were currently in repayment under this program. And since the last time I talked to you about the program, one loan has been fully repaid, and that was by the City of Antioch. Program update for loan funding in fiscal year 2019-2020. The application deadline will be February 1st, 2019, about 2.5 months from now. The hard copy application and a version that can be filled out online are both currently available at DBW's website, and applicants can choose which version that they'd like to fill out. The application process is competitive, and there's no typical loan amount. The amount varies based on the project scope and the local sponsor's ability to repay the loan. DBW is continuing to work on securing external advice on this program so we can ensure our public loan program conforms to commercial lending standards. Karen talked about that, and that's required by statute, Harbor's NAB code 71.4B. And with that, I'll pause and ask Mr. Chair if you have any questions about this program.
Questions? None.
Very good. So next, I will turn to DBW's loan program for private marinas. This one's authorized by Harbors and Navigation Code, Section 76 to 77.1. And DBW administers the Private Small Craft Harbor Loan Program, which provides loans to private marina owners to develop or improve privately owned boating facilities that are open to the public. Project features that can be funded through this program are generally the same as those that can be funded through the public program, such as boat berthing, breakwater construction, and the like. And pictured here on the slide is Treasure Island Marina. This facility is the one from which we've most recently given a private loan through this program. And this project is currently in the permitting process. In the state's fiscal year 2018-19 budget, $5.5 million in funding was authorized for loans through this program. However, DBW hasn't received any applications for these funds. Several private loans DBW has made in the past through this program are currently generating principal and interest payments. As you can see on the slide, in fiscal year 2017-18, about $190,000 in loan principal was repaid to the fund, and approximately $330,000 in interest also came into the fund. No private loans have been fully repaid since this time last year. There are currently four private loans in repayment by three lendees. For fiscal year 2019-20 loan funds, application deadline is February 1, 2019. Application is on our website and is available both in hard copy or online formats, whichever the applicant prefers. And as with the public loan program, statute requires DBW to work on engaging external assistance to ensure that our program meets commercial lending standards. And Mr. Chair, do you have any questions about the private program?
Questions, commissioners? None. Everybody's appreciative of your presentation thus far and understand it.
Delighted to hear it. No questions. I mean, uncovering all the ground we need. Okay, I will shift gears now. DBW administers two local assistance grant programs for shoreline protection. By statute, DBW is the state entity with primary responsibility for shoreline maintenance and erosion control. DBW shoreline programs promote safe public access to the state's coastal waterways. They help to mitigate the disruptive effects of shoreline development on natural coastal processes. So I'll discuss the Public Beach Restoration Program first. This is in statute at Harbor's Navigation Code 69.5 to 69.9. Projects funded through this program involve the cost-effective engineered placement of sand on beaches or in the nearshore environment. And the picture on the slide shows a shoreline area in the city of San Clemente. It's currently the focus of a beach restoration project led by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. The riprap you see is protecting a heavily used railway segment that the federal government considers strategically important. Federal legislation has authorized a 50-year beach nourishment project at this location. The fiscal year 2018-19 budget contains $1.3 million in funding for two beach restoration projects under this program. There are currently 14 projects underway through this program. The application deadline for the program is also February 1st, 2019. This deadline is for funding in fiscal year 2021, or for a year and a half after the deadline. This program is designed not to respond to emergencies, but to address long-term chronic erosion issues. So the application instructions for this year will be posted on our website in the next couple of weeks, and we are hoping to have the application available for completion and submission online this year as well. Do you have any questions about this program, Mr. Chair?
I see none.
All right. And the final program I will cover today is the Shoreline Erosion Control Grant Program. Since 1970, DBW has had a mandate to administer this program. Mm-hmm. It's in statute at Harbor's Navigation Code 65 to 67.4. The primary purposes of this program are to study problems of coastal erosion and to construct projects to stabilize beaches and shoreline areas. That can be done through soft solutions like dune and beach restoration or through strategically building hard structures like seawalls, jetties, breakwaters, what have you. I have a picture on this slide. You've seen this project already in Deputy Director Fernandez's presentation. This is the Santa Cruz project just east of their Santa Cruz Small Craft Harbor. As part of a larger coastal access and protection project, the county has constructed a protective structure to prevent coastal erosion in the area immediately east of the harbor. No new projects for this program were funded in the state's 2018-19 budget. Two projects funded through this program are currently in progress and are nearing completion. We're in the process of getting this application online too, and the deadline for applying for 2021 funds is February 1st, 2019. And do you have any questions about this program, Mr. Chair?
Commissioners? Seeing none?
This concludes my presentation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Would it be convenient now to take our break and get prepared for our presentation on quagga mussels? And is it 5 or 10 that you need? 10 minutes. We'll take a 10-minute break. Be back the clock on the wall at 5 after. Thank you. I'd like to call the meeting back to order, and with that, we'll move on to our quagga mussel program and other mussels.
Quagga and zebra mussels. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Kara Roderick, and I have the privilege to be here today to talk about the Division of Boating and Waterways Quagga and Zebra Mussel Infestation Prevention Grant Program. Lots of words. For short, we call it the QZ Grant Program. So I am the team supervisor of a small but mighty team at the division, and I work under Eddie Hard in the Aquatic Invasive Species Branch. So our update this morning, I'll be teeing up a few different topics related to QZ, and one is the kickoff of our new grant cycle. In February, our team is going to kick off the next 2-year grant cycle. It'll be our 5th grant cycle since the inception of the program. And as was the case last year, we will have $3.75 million available to grant. In your packets related to the QZ grant program, you'll find 4 different things. One is the summary and update of the program. The other is the save the date announcement that went out this week to our interested parties. You'll find 4 maps. It's 2 papers. They're double-sided. And that is summarizing geographically our last 4 years of grant cycle, so you'll see who our grantees were, where they are. And then lastly, you'll find a 2-page summary of the QZ pilot project, which Acting Deputy Director Fernandez talked about earlier, and I'll talk a little bit more about it in a second. So part of the tee-up is we are highlighting this morning partnerships related to our program. So the first is the partnership of the multimedia campaign that you heard about already. So the QZ program was benefited from that campaign because we were able to do the pilot project at Lake Paris, a California state park. And that was helpful for our program so we could learn outreach techniques and to be the most effective and efficient with our funding. So the nuggets that we will learn will be shared with our grantees going forward. The second partnership I'd like to highlight is that with our sister agency, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. CDFW is very important to our program because they not only help us with preparing for our next grant cycle, but they also help us while we open the process for the grants. So CDFW staff at headquarters and the regional scientists statewide help us by ranking the applications for award. So today you will meet Martha Volkoff from CDFW. She's Environmental Program Manager of the Invasive Species Program. Also today you're going to meet Lieutenant Bob Pera, and Warden Tim Bola. And Martha will talk more about them in a minute. And then lastly, we want to highlight our partnership with a grantee today. So Dave Cowan is here today to talk with you, and he's the Water Resources Director. Lake County, who he represents, has been awarded 6 QZ grants thus far, and they have been for Clear Lake. So with that, I can turn the mic over to Martha. If you have any more questions, if you have any questions for me right now, I can address those, or I can wait till the end.
Pressing on would be good.
Okay, Martha.
Hi. Carrie took care of my introductions, so I'll jump right into my update. So the Department of Fish and Wildlife receives approximately $3 million from the Harbors and Watercraft Fund each year for the past 11 years since quagga mussels were introduced into California. That money is divided up within our agency. Approximately two-thirds of that money goes toward our science and management program, and about a sixth of that goes toward our enforcement program, which I will let Lieutenant Parra speak to during his portion. So within that management and science capacity within our department, we have staff in our headquarters office that works on policy and statewide issues and coordination. And then we have 6 staff out in our regions throughout the state who are available to agencies in their local area to work with them on their prevention programs at their water bodies and also with early detection monitoring for quagga mussels. Headquarters also has a lab capacity, which we provide for analysis of early detection monitoring samples conducted by Department of Fish and Wildlife staff as well as by local agencies at no cost to them. We also work with local agencies of mussel-infested water bodies on their containment plans to ensure that those waters do not serve as vectors for the spread of mussels to other uninfested water bodies. And we also invest a lot of effort into outreach and education on mussel containment, which I would attribute a large portion of the lack of spread of mussels throughout California to early investments in that outreach and education, which efforts like you heard previously on looking at what the benefits of outreach and education and boater knowledge about mussel issues are is helpful to inform where we need to go further in outreach and education. As Kara mentioned, we also collaborate with Division of Boating and Waterways on their grant program and outreach and education efforts. And to follow up on their Save the Date announcement, we plan to send out shortly a notice to those local agencies who may be interested in applying for grants what we can do to help prepare them to be successful in their grant applications, and also offering a webinar in the coming weeks so we can get ahead of their grant applications. I'd also like to mention another part of this partnership is with our California Department of Food and Agriculture. They run border protection stations along the border for California, looking for agricultural, typically commodities coming across the borders, but they also, back in 2007, added watercraft inspections to those activities at the border station. So we're, since in the last 11 years, they've inspected, I would guess around now, 1.5 million watercraft coming into the state, and each year quarantine about 80 or so watercraft suspected of carrying mussels. So they're really integral into the mussel prevention efforts in California. And then our regional scientists follow up on those quarantined watercraft to ensure that they are not a threat to spreading mussels in the state. I think that's it for me. I can turn it over to Lieutenant Parra now.
Are there any
Questions?
I have one, and I'm not sure whether you're the right one to ask. The $3 million that Fish and Wildlife gets, does that go through our normal grant process?
No, that's through the legislation or the legislative allocation to the department. So it's not a grant.
But it comes from the revolving fund, is that correct?
Yes.
Can someone explain that to us, how that works?
Yeah. So I can explain it. So through the legislation and through the governor's budget, what's called appropriations of funds are transferred or appropriated to that particular department for the purpose that was described here. So through the budget summary, the governor's budget summary of the amount that we see taken from Harbors and Watercraft, this is the money that she's referring to.
Since we have a program, does it come out of the Quagga Mussel?
It comes
our Quagga Mussel fund, so to speak.
So part of our Harbors and Watercraft review, we're checking on how those funds are transferred, whether the funds come in from the motor vehicle on the Quagga Zebra sticker funds that come in from there to the Harbors and Water, or transfer into the Harbors and Watercraft Revolving Fund. And then I believe, but we'll confirm, that then the funds are also transferred to the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Is there a reason why they wouldn't go through our normal process?
Normal process as
of
far
grant,
as...
Of any other grant, any other agency? I mean, if San Bernardino County wanted Quagga Mussel, they would go through our normal process, right, of obtaining a grant.
Yes. So on this, from the state side, if a state entity that this is through legislation or through the budget, so that would be a different process.
The Harbors and Nav Code established the percentage that the departments would get. So it already set out a percentage. It was like 85-15% that DBW would have for giving as local assistance grants, and that's what you've heard me talk about. And then there's also the percentage that was automatically earmarked for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. So that was set up in statute. And I can look up the exact code for you. It's not on my brain at this moment.
No, that's...
But it's Harbors and Nav Code.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning. As previously stated, I'm Lieutenant Bob Pera. I'm with the Department of Fish and Wildlife Law Enforcement Division, and I'm here basically to speak to you regarding my involvement with the Quagga and Zebra Mussel program in the canine side of things. I supervise our statewide canine program. Well, with me today is Warden Tim Bola and, of course, Canine Luna. She is one of our current 11 dogs we have deployed statewide. In the past, we've had up to 22 dogs statewide. We've suffered a few losses recently with a few canine deaths and retirement. So our numbers have gone down a little bit, but we're working on bringing those back up. The biggest thing that the dogs do for us is their detection capabilities. So all 11 of those dogs are trained for detection of quagga and zebra mussels. They don't make a distinction as far as one mussel versus the other. It's just a descended mussel. So generally, where we use them is on the enforcement side of things. It's commonly accepted through the law enforcement world that a trained detection dog can save up to about 10 officer hours per inspection. So by deploying the dog, we can more quickly do inspections on watercraft and in areas that need inspection. But also, as you can imagine, the quagga mussels like to hide in the nooks and crannies, often places where humans can't see. And that's where the dog's nose comes into play to help us see those areas. So we can get through them a lot faster and search more areas that way. Canine's involvement with the quagga mussel program began at its inception of our canine program in 2006. Since that time, all dogs in our program have been trained to find quagga and zebra mussels. Our busiest year was in 2011 when our canine team, this doesn't include all of our officers statewide who are involved with our quagga mussels, just our canine teams inspected over 6,000 vessels and found 85 of them to have some sort of quagga or zebra mussel infested on them, and contacted 9,000 people out of that. Last year, our numbers have been down a little bit, like I said earlier, due to our reduction in our canine teams, down to 401 vessels searched, but still finding 10 mussels or 10 alerts out of those 400 vessels. What I have noticed, speaking with my 11 officers statewide, is that they all report that the education of the boaters is almost 100%. They all understand the clean, drain, and dry before they leave the infested waters and come into the state. So I think, echoing what Martha said earlier, that education, that early education, has really been beneficial to the state in getting that word out there, and people are really aware of what's happening. So I think that also attributes to some of our reduction in numbers on fines as well, because they're becoming more educated into it. So with that, I've set up a quick little demonstration here so we can have Canine Luna demonstrate her skills for you all. There are some, in this case, zebra mussels from San Justo Reservoir here in California in the room here, and hopefully where everyone's going to get a good chance to see it. So, Miss Luna, if you wouldn't mind to show us your skills.
With Luna, her alert is she'll either sit down or lay down, depending on the height of them. And most, more times than not, she'll bark. We'll try to get her nose trained to as close to the source as possible. Some vessels. And there's, you know, all different types of on the vessel that, you know, attached. So it's really important the dogs kind of assist as much as possible on the river, right on the surface. But they just alert on the river of the boat. Then we're on our hands now, we're trying to, you know, jam it. So that's something we fully train the dogs. We'll see when she hopefully finds them. That detector that works. It wasn't supposed to be that quick, but
that was almost too easy. The mussels do have quite the distinctive smell, and she did pick up that odor pretty quickly. I thought it was going to be a little more trouble for
her. And if I, you know, if I'm looking at something else, she won't leave that, and she'll make sure she gets my attention. So I.
So.
Muscle puts on. But the reason why she went right there is a good chance that she, right when she took off, she got a whiff of the odor. And so that wasn't her just being lucky. It's pretty amazing, even, you know, working with the dog all the time, I'm still amazed about how they're able to find these such tiny looking, you know, small little things. So it's what these dogs can do and the time they save, you can't beat it with any method or tool.
Any, Commissioner Livingston.
Lieutenant, thank you for the presentation and to the handler as well. Nice work. So what's the enforcement posture if you come across a vessel that has those? Is it a warning? Is it a citation? Is it moving the vessel? What do you do?
It's generally bringing into quarantine of the vessel until it can get properly decontaminated and then be inspected a second time to ensure that there are no quagga or zebra mussels left anywhere that they could be introduced into the state. So and that we will work, law enforcement will work closely with the regional and the state biologists to ensure that we were all working on the same page and going through that process. But it's a quarantine, then a decontamination.
Thank you.
Impressive, to say the least.
Amen.
Thank you.
Good question.
Yes.
Well, I just love Luna. I mean, you just have to love her.
She was whimpering over here.
I saw she was the first one with her camera out, too.
As you can tell, I speak canine. I just love them. How many do you have right now statewide? When was the program initiated,
And have we quantified how many dollars we've saved the taxpayers and how many man hours we've saved?
So our current canine program was brought to fruition in 2006. At the height of the program, we had 22 dogs statewide. Currently, we're down to 11. And that's, you can imagine, California is quite the big state, so we are spread thin. As far as time that's been saved, I couldn't even begin to imagine. Like I said, with a dog, like I said, commonly believed to save 10 man hours per incident. Even this weekend, Luna and Tim will be up in Truckee at the agriculture station doing a joint chronic wasting disease and quagga muscle inspection station. So there'll be vessels coming in that they'll be inspecting there. We do them fairly regularly, especially through the spring and summer. So to even begin to answer that, I don't even know if I could begin to quantify that.
That's amazing. I truly, truly commend you. Because of course they're like the best.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they're the best. Thank you. Excellent presentation.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you, Lieutenant.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
Can you hear me okay? A little tall for this thing. My name is David Cowan. I'm a Director of Water Resources with Lake County. I appreciate you allowing me the time to explain our program to you. One of the things that we are responsible for is protection of the lake with regard to quagga mussels. When I say the lake, I mean Clear Lake. I can tell you right now, other than that being a really tough act to follow, that would have taken one of our inspectors probably 45 minutes to do. If a boat were in this room and it was deemed to be from a high-risk area, it would have taken us at least 45 minutes to go through that boat and make sure, and not necessarily sure that we would have found it. The dog gives definitely a sense of confidence when you go through that process. Mouse left. Perfect. So when Kara asked me to give a presentation, we talked a little bit about what I should talk about. She said, just tell them about your program, about what you do. As she mentioned, we've had 6 grants from Boating and Waterways over the previous years, and those
to the extent he can.
And I mean, they're so smart. That's funny. You know, obviously they got.
We did have to take a little extended break so one of our commissioners could have a photo opportunity with Luna and
outreach.
She's now had her canine fix and we're ready to continue with your presentation. So
for the sake of the record, should I start over, state my name, or did you catch that? Or? Yeah. Yeah, if you back up the slide, please. Yeah, I mean, check, 1, 2, hello. I can bend down a little bit. Hello.
We need to back up the slide to the beginning, right?
Yes, sir, he's got it. Greetings. Thank you once again for allowing me time to present our quagga and zebra mussel program. My name is David Cowan. I'm Water Resources Director for County of Lake. If you're not familiar with Lake County, it's just north of here, north of Napa County. We are a rural county, 65,000 people in the entire county. Oops, wrong one. And what I'd like to tell you about today is our zebra and quagga mussel program. In Lake County, we have two things that drive our economy. One, agriculture. We're known for pears. Got a pretty good selection of wine grapes and walnuts. Two, tourism. And that tourism is driven largely by fishing, largely because of Clear Lake. There are a couple of smaller lakes that provide good fishing in the region. If you look on your screen, the one on to the east of Clear Lake is Indian Valley, and then Pillsbury up to the north. But Clear Lake is clearly the driver of our economy in the county. It's 43,000 acres, bass fishing mecca. It consistently stays on the top 10 list of places to go for bass fishing. In 2018, it was number three for best bass fishing based on Bassmasters, the BASS Association. So we have thousands of fishermen coming not only from out of the region, other places in California, but also out of the state, and in some cases even out of the country, to come catch fish in this lake. Add to that the fact that we have 750 access ramps on Clear Lake. And we've kind of got a double whammy of dangers as far as the ability of infested boats coming into the lake. So you can see why this is a concern to us and why working with boating and waterways is so important to keeping the quagga mussels out. The gentleman behind me corrected the third bullet up there for me. I was going to get to it, but I'm glad somebody was paying attention. Clear Lake is the largest lake in California. What's wrong with that statement? It's the largest lake wholly contained within the boundaries of California. Tahoe is larger than Clear Lake. And we're talking freshwater here. Salton Sea is obviously larger than Clear Lake. But a couple little factoids from you. What we're trying to do, I'm not going to talk today about the biology or life history. I know, I'm sure all of you are familiar with quagga and zebra mussels, but we're trying to keep what you see on that prop, on that image, from happening in Clear Lake and in the rest of the water bodies in Lake County, as well as California. So how do we do that? First, we monitor. We have 18 of these substrate monitors that you see on your screen. All they are settling plates to allow quagga or zebra mussel veligers, the larva, a chance to settle. It lets us know it's an early detection effort. That's all it is. It's simple, it's inexpensive, and it's an easy way to let us know if there are quagga mussels in the lake. Secondarily, we go out with Department of Fish and Wildlife and do plankton tows. Again, this is just an early monitoring effort to see if there are any of those veligers, any of those planktonic forms of the mussels in the water. Thirdly, and I've heard mentioned today several times, the importance of outreach. I want to emphasize that our outreach program, we will get on board and we will present at any event in and in some cases outside of Lake County to spread the word that we don't want quagga mussels in the lake and what people can do, because that's where it starts, what people can do to prevent that from happening. We'll set up at boat shows, car shows, the county fair, and one of the really neatest things, this picture, I'm going to show you a picture of a boat. One of the neatest things that we have is an 18-foot fiberglass boat that was in Lake Mead for a time. We were able to pull it out, got permits to shellac the bottom of it, to coat it, and we'll take that boat around, turn it upside down so that people can really see the impact of what would happen if quagga mussels were to come into their lake, into their region, how it would change basically their way of life and their recreation. There's a picture of a bunch of kids around the boat. Again, it's good to get hands-on. So the meat of the program is really our screening and inspection program. That's where the rubber meets the road. We have stickers, county-wide stickers that we distribute on top of the state stickers. So if we, you would come into Lake County to do your have a fishing trip, week-long weekend fishing trip with your family, buddies, friends, and if you did a little research, you'd find out on the web pages, through talking to anybody that's ever been in Lake County, that what you need to do is you need to get a screen. You need to go through a risk assessment. We have 21 locations throughout the county where you can do this. It's simple. It's a form, a survey that we ask folks to fill out. And what we're looking for, there are half a dozen questions on it. The key question is, where has your boat been? Has it been in an infested water body? And we will know that. They don't have to tell us if it was in an infested water body. And how long ago that was. If everything checks out and your boat is a low risk, get your sticker and you're on your way. We hope you have a good time here. If that boat has been in an infested water body, that's a problem. You'll then be we'll call one of our 10 inspectors, their WIT certified inspectors, to come down and do the work that Luna did in about 3 seconds, and we'll go over the boat. We might actually ask a few questions of you to make sure if your boat's been out of the water and in a dry, arid environment for over 30 days and there's no water in the live well, no harm, no foul. We'll take a look around the boat. But a full-on inspection, like I mentioned, might take 30 to 45 minutes to get through. If quagga mussels are found, or zebra mussels are found, then we have a full-on decontamination, and we have 2 decontamination units that have been purchased over the years from grants from Department of Boating and Waterways. And you see the numbers there. They're pretty staggering as far as the amount of inspections and screenings that we'll do per year. So what are our program strengths? I think one is our relationship with staff at Department of Boating and Waterways and the availability of the grants. We've had, as Kara mentioned, 6 over the years. Our last was for $300,000. Those grants pay directly for our equipment. They pay for our part-time ramp monitors for salaries for our part-time ramp monitors, and those are the boots on the ground. Those are the folks that man the ramps and are making sure that people have stickers. They're doing outreach on a daily basis. And then our community support. There's a better picture of the boat, and again, you start to drag that thing around, and folks will see the ramifications of having these things infest your water bodies. And so in the beginning, when we started this program, there were a lot of there was some kickback as far as why do I have to have another sticker? The state, I've already got this one sticker. But over time, I think people have found, and we have people calling us from out of town, out of state, saying, hey, what's this about a sticker? I saw it online. And we try to get folks in there, tell them where they can go, where there's not much of a wait, because they want to come there, and they want to go fishing, and they want to have a good time. They don't want to mess around with having some burdensome process take place on their boat. Well, with every program, there are vulnerabilities. With this one, probably the biggest one is everybody's on the honor system. And I think all in all, what we have is a good system, but there's nothing to say that if somebody comes in from out of town and they live in an area where there's an infested water body, they have their sticker. That sticker is good for a month. If they go back home and then they come back within that same time frame, hopefully they will touch base with us and we can go back and do another screening if they've had their boat in a water body. We don't charge to decon boats. We don't charge to take another look at a boat. But I think over the years we've convinced people of the importance of trying to keep the lake muscle-free. Again, it's one of the top 10 bass fishing lakes in the country, and if people want to continue down that path, we're going to have to keep them out. And then limited law enforcement. I mentioned the number of boat ramps that are and I will say that most of those are private boat ramps. We only have about three dozen that are no-fee public boat ramps. At any rate, there's easy access, and we can't be everywhere 24 hours a day. So limited enforcement is also a vulnerability. I talked a little bit about outreach. You get it from the kids, and this one hit the money right on the head. Please clean your boats to prevent us from having to pay tons of money. That pretty much sums it all. If you know anything about quagga mussels, when they get into a water body, they cost you tons of money. So once again, I appreciate your time, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer. My employee, Mark Miller, is the one that is the coordinator of the program and much more knowledgeable, so I'll put his information up there, too, if anybody wants that.
Thank you. Any comments, questions from commission?
Doing a good job. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. We really, Lake County really appreciates this grant and this funding.
Thank you, sir.
I just wanted to come back to answer your question more completely. So you were asking about the funding that goes to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and it's in Harbors and Nav Code Section 676, which discusses that not to exceed 15% of the remaining revenues that go into the Harbors and Watercraft Fund from the mussel sticker would go to CDFW, and the remaining 85% would be available for local assistance grants.
Okay.
And then also there's a section within the Harbors and Nav Code, it's in Chapter 4, and it discusses that the funding will be available to CDFW for them to address their boating-related spread of invasive species, their work on that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Appreciate it. Any other questions or comments? With that, we'll move on to the triennial program report.
You don't want me to comment on it? So at our last commission meeting, the division presented the completed draft of the triennial report, and the commission was provided a copy there. And at the time, the commission requested that we provide or allow for public comment. And so we have done that. We provided 30-day public comment on our website, and notification went out, and the division did not receive any public comment on it. So, and at the time, at our last commission, we also asked the commission to provide us with public comment as well. And the division didn't receive any comment from the commission either. But this time, I'm...
And I assume, do we need to approve this, or is that what we need to do? So
yes.
We need to approve it so
yes.
you
At
can send it on to the legislature.
At this time, we ask that the commission move forward to approve it for final.
Any comments?
No move, Mr. Chair.
Been moved.
Second.
Seconded. Any discussion? Charlie, would you please call the roll?
Yes, Chairman. Commissioner Brian Cooley, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner David Livingston, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Virginia Medrano, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Doug Metz, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Commissioner Frank Peralta, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. Chairman Randy Short, how do you vote?
Aye.
Aye. All ayes approved of the triennial report.
Thank you. With that, we move on to the last item on our agenda, is agenda items for our next meeting. Our next meeting is in February. We don't have a solid date yet, as it's a little difficult to coordinate all four commissions, and so staff needs to refine. Everybody needs to set their dates so we can.
Yeah. We should have a date proposed no later than a couple weeks. We should have a date identified to the commission and no later than 2 weeks. Location will be in Sacramento.
Good. Items that we've talked about. I know we would like to have the history of the loans and grants on that agenda, and we would like to. There was something else. Was it the
Mr. Chair? Have we had an accounting of the outlays from Small Craft Harbors Revolving Fund? What agencies? I know we loaned Governor Schwarzenegger, was paid back $29 million. I mean, actual outlays to identifiable agencies for, you know, purposes. I think that would be very important.
I believe that is then the fund condition?
That will be part of the fund condition discussion. Yes.
And so we need to have that on the agenda as well, the fund condition, and looking at some of those outlays that, I guess my term, that doesn't go through normal channels, that appears that it comes out before normal channels.
Will we have distribution of that book or before the meeting, so we can study that?
Fund condition, my understanding is that the fund condition is finalized January 10th, I think.
That would still give time for February.
Okay. Yeah. The division would request that the commission make that request, and then...
Is there any objection to making that request to have that fund condition report made available to us? My understanding is that it's final on January 10th.
Jan 10 is when the governor submits his, Jan 10 budget.
So as soon after that is available, if that would be distributed, that any objections to that? Hearing none, that is our request.
Okay. Noted.
Anything else? Then we will adjourn. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Bring us along. Thank you.